It's time for Cover 2 Broncos. Just a couple dudes breaking down scheme, film, and the numbers. Now, your hosts, Joe Rowles.
Welcome back to another episode of Cover 2 Broncos. I am Joe Rowles, and today I am joined by PFS Herbert guy, Seth Galina.
All right, I'm out. See you later.
I mean, I don't think you were in the minority there. Like, I was very skeptical of Herbert coming out too. And then also, like, when he hit, like, I'm disappointed because obviously he's now with the Chargers. Yeah. And it looks like, I mean, I'm here to hopefully for you to talk me off the ledge here, but it definitely looks like the Broncos may actually have the fifth best quarterback in the AFC West right now. And that's kind of disappointing rough. When there's four teams. And I mean, if you like the backups for anybody else, like, it might be worse.
Well, so I've like taken a radical shift on this because me and Brandon Staley, the head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, are best friends now. So I'm pro. No, we're not best friends, but I had him on the podcast, on my podcast, the PFF College Football Podcast, and honestly, like, he, you know, just from watching Staley's work at in Los Angeles, on the other side of Los Angeles, with the Rams, was so impressive. And now that I've talked to him on my podcast, it's like, well, I'm now the Herbert guy, but like in a positive way, I think.
Yep.
I need to spin this in any way possible. But yeah, I think we're all, like, a lot of us were not anti-Herbert, but just very like, I'm not sure about this guy. And I think for me, one of my blind spots, and I told this to a friend of mine on his podcast recently that I refuse to change, is that, like, I just don't rate the guys who are like big arms, who like have some accuracy problems, maybe throw to the other team a little too much, you know, especially in college. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, that's not what I'm into. I'd like to see the guys who are a little more technical, who maybe don't have the physical talents, but have to become more technical, and their footwork has to be perfect every time, and the ball placement has to be perfect every time, and the timing has to be perfect every time. And with Herbert, you know, one of the crazy things is, like, you watch him and he looks like a rookie, and then he's completing all these balls in the same sense of where the footwork isn't great, decision making isn't great, but holy shit, what a throw, what an arm on this guy. And it makes everything, and now you can build off that, and you can say, okay, well, he was just a rookie, so where can we build off? Well, there's all these other things that he needs to improve on, but you can do that while still, hopefully, you know, if you're a Chargers fan, hopefully still winning games, because he can create such explosive plays with his arm. And I think I would be excited if I was a Chargers fan. I think there's not, you know, there's some warning signs, I think, when you look into the data a little bit. But besides that, I think I would be pretty excited if I was a Chargers fan, which apparently I am now.
And so I'm getting way ahead of myself, because you're one of those people, anytime I've ever talked to you on Twitter, anytime I've ever bugged you, I've always just felt like you're really approachable. So for those listening, if you have not picked up on who I'm talking to, this is Seth Galina from PFF.
Didn't even get to that.
Yeah, yet. No, so I screwed up. But he hosts the College Football Podcast with Deontay Lee. If you don't listen to it, I have it bookmarked. I catch it every week. So I did see the Brandon Staley episode. I tend to catch them a couple days after they come out, so I'm still waiting for this week's one. So no spoilers or spoilers. And, you know, I'll just give me some.
Well, honestly, this one is really interesting. We talked about recruiting, okay?
Yep.
But even if you're not into recruiting, like, and maybe you don't have a favorite team in college or whatever it may be, I think it was really interesting because we talked about, like, American demographics and shifting demographics. That is what is affecting recruiting. You know, that's how we recruiting is affected. So I think if you're into that type of stuff, it's still an interesting episode to listen to.
Well, one of the things I love about your episodes too is you kind of cover all levels, like guys going in the league, football as a whole from a macro level.
I think yeah.
You'll dig into scheme. You'll dig into different stuff with teams. For me, I just love football in general. I feel like I learn every time I listen to it. And that's, again, guys, that's why I recommend it. One of the big reasons why I had you on, because I feel like I try to get people on there smarter than me so I can learn. And hopefully people listening get something out of it. But we're not here to, you know, talk too much doom and gloom about how Herbert's going to be amazing.
We're here to talk doom and gloom about Drew Lock, right?
Well, the good transition with that is, a lot of the hope with Drew Lock is tied to similar ideas that you just mentioned with Herbert, is that Drew Lock has the arm. and he has like the kind of the greedy, aggressive mentality of going deep. And then basically we can just fix everything else. And that's kind of been the MO with him since he came out. And I don't want to like put words in your mouth. I've been very skeptical of Drew Lock for similar reasons to why you were skeptical of Justin Herbert and similar reasons to why I was skeptical of Justin Herbert. I watched his tape coming out and I was like, he looks like a roller coaster. Yeah. And it's like, you're really hoping he puts a lot of stuff together that a lot of guys don't typically put together. And again, I'm not trying to be too down on him, but that was my thought going into his rookie year. And again, he won some games. He had some promising moments and everybody kind of got on board in Broncos country. And then last year happened and now he's in a competition with Teddy Bridgewater. And the hope in Broncos country, I don't know how closely you followed this, but the hope in Broncos country basically is Drew Lock basically has to win the job or we're screwed because Teddy Bridgewater isn't going to take us anywhere because we already know what he is. Whereas Drew Lock could still put it together. I may be way off on this. I went back and looked, me and a colleague, Joe Mahoney, if you guys listening, we went back and looked at every quarterback since 2000 with 16 starts or more. And then we tried to put together how likely is it really that a guy is going to break out in year three. And according to the data, the only guys that have done it that like are notably have done it, like gone from like where Drew Lock was last year to good, not like crappy to bad, but like actually good, Drew Brees and Josh Allen. And I know you're familiar with Drew Brees, and this is actually how I first came across your stuff is, and again, I want to recommend, this is, again, if you guys don't already follow Seth on Twitter, follow him. It's PFF Seth. But you did breakdowns of Drew Brees. You did breakdowns of Peyton Manning a couple summers ago. And it was just, I learned a ton. But you've seen Drew Brees and you're very familiar with where Drew Brees was when at one point they drafted Philip Rivers thinking he was a bust. And then he put it together. Are we crazy to think that, and I say we, but I'm pretty skeptical of this. Are we as like Broncos fans, is it realistic to think that this could happen with Lock considering that COVID was a huge part of kind of what went wrong for everybody last year? Or are we just kind of fooling ourselves?
You know, I don't think it would be realistic. Like if you're betting on it, you wouldn't bet on it because it's exactly what you just said. The third year breakout like so rarely happens. And I think just being like, well, he'll just do what Josh Allen did last year, or he'll just do what Drew Brees did 15 years ago and become a Hall of Fame quarterback. I mean, it's not something you would bet on. I understand that there's always, you know, especially with a player like Lock, there's going to be flashy plays. Now, one of the differences, in my opinion, with Lock being in that kind of same type of quarterback as Justin Herbert is Herbert's arm is like A to A plus. And I don't think Drew Lock's arm is A plus. I'm not saying it's a bad arm at all. Like in terms of arm strength, only getting the ball down the field in tight windows and stuff like that. So I don't think it's A plus. It's probably more in the B plus type of range, I guess. Kind of reminds me of Zach Wilson this year coming out when I watched his tape. It's like people were like, you know, with Zach, maybe this is getting off topic, but you know, with Zach Wilson, it was like, oh, well, yes, I understand that he didn't really play anyone this year. He wasn't very good in 2018 and 2019 at BYU when they had full schedules and they played SEC and Pac-12 and all these opponents. And then they played just G5 teams and some pretty bad G5 teams, and he looked great. But it's like my concern is like, okay, but there's nothing on tape that tells us anything NFL-wise with Zach Wilson. So you're saying, okay, well, it's the traits. But the traits aren't A plus with Zach Wilson. He makes some nice looking throws on the run doing that stuff, but you're talking about an arm and an accuracy that is at best for me A minus. So I think that's very similar to Lock, where it's like, yeah, he's making all these plays. He's making some plays outside of structure and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, this is what Patrick Mahomes does and stuff. And it's like, okay, but the arm is not. I don't think the arm is that level where you can just get away with that stuff. And then hopefully you're still starting in the league while the rest of the game starts to come around. And I just wonder if I think that's probably the issue with Lock. It's like if you play enough games, you probably kind of figure it out. in the league, and just like in terms of like, you know, making sure your protections are checked and making sure you're throwing to your hot receiver when you need to, making sure you can, you're actually reading defenders and not just like throwing blindly. You probably figure it out if you're giving the opportunities, but it's like, you got to do like, with, again, going back to Herbert, Herbert has done enough with that A plus arm that he's going to be continue giving those opportunities. With Locke and a B plus arm, it's like, okay, well, eventually we can't keep giving you these opportunities for you to like wait around, for us to wait around and have you learn the nuances of the game, because the B plus arm is not taking us anywhere. Whereas the A plus arm of Herbert seems to be taking us places. So that's really my concern with Locke. I mean, I don't like the tape. I mean, it's, what else do you want me to tell you? It's like,
no,
the footwork is inconsistent. Maybe I shouldn't blame him all for this, but there is like pocket anxiety, I would say. Now, the interior of the Broncos offensive line is not great.
Yep.
We know that. But I still think there were opportunities for him to take a deep breath in the pocket and kind of sit in there and keep his receiver options available. This is all the stuff that I should promo it now. But so I wrote an article about Drew Locke and about Teddy Bridgewater for PFF.com that's coming out Friday. So you guys can go to that. So I'm going to be saying a lot of the same points that I made in the article. But so basically, you know, that pocket anxiety leads to two things. I don't know what, it's maybe a chicken or an egg thing, but it's like, you know, leads to inconsistent footwork. It leads to being late on throws, and he's not accurate enough to get away with some of that stuff. And again, it goes back to the arm, like the arm strength is not A plus enough to get away with some being late on some throws. And what ends up happening is the anxiety in the pocket leads to him bouncing out of the pocket, like, you know, rolling out. And what you're doing there is you're cutting the field in half. Whereas with, Teddy Bridgewater is a great example of the opposite. And Teddy has his problems too, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But, you know, Teddy will stay in the pocket and will hitch up in the pocket, and we'll try and keep that, you know, kind of pocket integrity going. But at least what it's doing is it's giving you all five eligible receivers available to you. Whereas the second you roll out, you're cutting the field in half. All of a sudden the five eligibles becomes two eligibles or three eligibles or one guy that you can throw the ball to. And that's a problem. And again, I do certainly understand that there was a lot of pressure coming from the inside last year. So yeah, okay, I get it. I've played quarterback before. It's tough to be in there when you're getting interior pressure, but I do think he has to do a better job of that type of stuff.
Well, and I want to mention here, just because those listening that are, and again, there's a segment of Broncos country that wants the Broncos to stick with Drew Lock over even trying to get Aaron Rodgers. So I want to try not, you know, I know that's where I'm at with it. And I don't want to just be a hater on it. And I don't think you or I are trying to be. I want to say, like, for those listening, Seth has played quarterback and he's coached quarterback. Oh, and he's coached for a long time.
I played high school quarterback, and now I play co-ed division B flag football quarterback. But I did coach quarterbacks at a high level.
Yeah, and that's all I'm trying to say.
High level.
But yeah. I just want to say, like, this isn't, and again, this is one of the reasons why I really wanted to pick your brand of quarterbacks, is like, you have studied it in a way and you understand it in a way that's just, it's beyond, like, from a fundamental level of what you know. And I'm glad you mentioned the pocket anxiety, because that was a big concern of mine with Locke basically all year last year, is he flushes out of clean pockets at times. And it's not always. Some of it was Lloyd Cushenberry, some of it's other people. So neither one of us are necessarily trying to pile on Locke with this. But when you're evaluating quarterbacks, it's important to separate the excuses from the actual things that are going on. And like, yes, COVID and that kind of stuff is all real. And it affected everybody. It wasn't an excuse. It actually happened. But at the same time, like, when you're rolling out of a clean pocket, cutting the field in half, and then eventually the defense starts to just play into that, and they know you're going to roll right, because Locke didn't roll left very much. It's usually to the right.
Well, I mean, that's normal for most quarterbacks, right? Yeah. You're going to roll to your strong side. But yeah, again, you're cutting the field in half, and it goes back to, you know, a lot of this is going to come back to the same place, which is like, what is the arm now? Like, you want to roll out? Great. Have fun. You better be damn accurate on the move. And like he's not really accurate from the pocket, so don't expect him to be accurate on the move. It's like you're cutting your field in half, and you're not really being able to hit receivers where you need to hit them. Man, it's not a winning combination. And I agree, we don't want to pile on, but there's just not a lot to positives. There just isn't. Like, I'm sorry, there just isn't a lot of positives. And I don't care. Like, I'm not anti-Lock, I'm not anti-Broncos, I'm not pro Broncos, I'm not pro Teddy or whatever, or Rodgers. Like, it's just you put the tape on and it ain't great. It's not great. You know, and you can look at the tape, you can look at the PFF grades or whatever, it's just not great.
Well, and one thing, this came up before the Saints game last year, because I reached out to you, and then all of a sudden, you know, the Broncos were screwed and they had Kendall Hinton.
Yeah.
But I reached out to you at one point because I was really curious about this, is that at one point the Broncos changed their scheme, and a lot of people that are really pro-Lock stick to this fact that the last five games, Lock made a huge jump. Okay. Some of it, he looked better. He did look better. Some of it was, and I'm not trying to, you know, whatever. Some of it was the fact that the Broncos changed what they were calling for him to some degree. There was a lot more static routes. I brought this up and you and I talked about it. And you mentioned this to me back right before the Saints game. I haven't looked at it since. The Broncos basically stopped using horizontal leading routes with Lock because he was so bad at it. And this, to me, was a big red flag because it's a thing that hurts Judy and it's a thing that hurts Hamler because both of them win more often on a horizontal plane.
Yeah.
And they're not going to win jump balls very often. That's not their game. And I'm not saying they're bad at it, but that's not why you drafted them. You drafted them to get open running a route and hitting them in stride to make plays after the catch. You need a quarterback who can take advantage of that. And Lock wasn't doing that last year.
So this is the crux of the article that I just wrote, which is, okay, let's assume that Drew Lock doesn't have this unbelievable Josh Allen jump in year three. Because if he does, then it's all good, right? It doesn't matter anything. He's just a great quarterback in that
spot. That's why I'm hoping for it.
Yeah.
Or Aaron Rodgers, so like but one or the other.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, if that happens, great. But we're assuming that that's not going to happen. So the article is basically Teddy or Drew, like which player can help, can kind of maximize the rest of the team better, because I don't think either one of them are a guy that's going to just elevate the team like an Aaron Rodgers would. But the roster is pretty good, right? Now, we know the defense is going to give them opportunities in kind of neutral game states where they're not going to be down in every game. The defense should be, you know, it's been at worst, it's going to be league average.
Yeah.
Which is kind of where it's been the last couple of years, but I think they did a good job in free agency and getting Von Miller back. So I think it'll be above league average, and that's kind of what you need to get in the playoffs, right? If the offense can work. But the offense, like you're saying, I think the offense has some really interesting receivers in terms of quick separators, yak. First of all, the tight end is a yak monster.
Yep.
And then, you know, with Judy and Hamler, you're getting – it's just quick underneath routes. I mean, Judy can probably be a little more, but underneath routes, let him separate, catch the ball, and hit upfield. And I think Sutton, you know, whatever, Sutton's more of a bigger X, I believe, but like, you know, still, you want a guy who can yak, and he can probably do that too. So when you look at these type of routes, like, who is, like, what are these routes? They're crossing routes, they're slant routes, they're in-breaking routes. Because those are the routes that gain yak. You throw an out route, and I saw Lock through some really nice what we'd call sail routes, so like a 10-yard out or 12-yard out. They're pretty nice. But those aren't what's going to they're big plays, and they can be big plays, but they're not the yak routes. Out routes are not yak routes. The yak routes are the in breaking routes or the crossing routes. And Drew Lock's accuracy, when you look up the PFF data, is pretty bad on those routes. And, you know, and it shows up in the numbers. Like, I mean, I don't have them in front of me, but I believe there's like a 2-yard difference in yak from throwing an out route under 20 yards and throwing an in breaking route under 20 yards. So you want, with that receiving core, which is heavy on guys who can go get yak, you don't want to be putting the ball behind them on in-breaking routes. And that's what Drew Lock did. Or putting the ball off, throwing over their heads, which you saw a lot of. Like, you just, that is killing them. Because they're so dynamic. Those guys are so dynamic with the ball in their hands that you just don't want to kill plays like that. Right? And even if it's a catchable ball, like, wouldn't you rather, like, if you're throwing behind him and he catches it and he goes down, you put that ball a little bit in front of him and he's running and you're getting another 5 yards. Like, those are super important yards for a quarterback that just isn't consistent. You know, you want to be able to hit some explosive plays where the quarterback just puts the ball in the receiver's hands and let them go. So, I think that was kind of like one of the bases for the article was like, hey, like, how can we maximize Yak with a really good receiving roster? And it's with in-breaking routes. And who's better, Lock or Bridgewater? It's probably Bridgewater. So, like, that's step one. I mean, there's a lot of factors here, but that's, I think, step one. Was just saying, hey, like, if he's going to be the same quarterback that he was, that's not going to work for the team, I don't think.
That's where I'm at. And I'm glad you brought up with the Yak, too, because and the ball being behind, because I think there's a fundamental difference between, like, a guy's accuracy and completion percentage and his actual ball placement. And that was a thing that, again, a lot of people – and I'm not trying to just, again, do the Drew Lock argument here. I feel like I have to touch on some of these. A lot of people will look at Drew Lock's completion percentage and say, look, he was pretty accurate. If you watch the actual throws, a lot of his catches were guys adjusting to the throws and making him right. Or their checkdowns, stuff like that. Yeah. Again, I'm not saying he can't hit the broadside of a barn, but I'm saying his ball placement was pretty scattershot in a lot of games last year, and it hurts the receivers. And that's one of those issues that, hopefully he's improved. And again, like, I think we both agree that, like, the league would be better if Drew Lock is better and wins that job by merit over Teddy Bridgewater, because the NFL is better with a gunslinging quarterback who's willing to push the ball downfield.
100%.
Yeah. But if he's the guy he was on last year's tape, it's hard for me to see how he's going to win that competition. And maybe, and again, I'm like the hater in chief of Drew Lock, I guess, because I think that, but I don't really like watching bad quarterback play, and that's what he was last year.
It's not good. No, we're not talking about a guy who's like mid-level right now. Yeah. We're talking about a guy who's like bottom of the league, you know, it's like him and Darnold and some other guys. Like, it's not good. I don't want to say it. I just want to ask you, because I'm going to look something up as we talk here, but what was that split there that you talked about, the offense changing? Like, what week was that?
Basically post-Miami. A lot of people point to Miami and then onwards as like when the offense kind of turned it on. And that's like Buffalo, LA 2, I want to say the second Kansas City game. The Saints game is obviously notwithstanding because he didn't play in it. But basically after he threw the pick against Miami, everyone kind of points to Drew Lock figuring it out. And again,
so that's week 11. So after week 11.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let me
and I want to bring this up to kind of, after you look at that, knowing what we know about Drew Lock and being realistic rather than really optimistic, because again, optimistic, I hope Drew Lock turns into a Hall of Famer.
Of course.
I've looked at the data, I've looked at his tape way too much. I can't in good conscience tell myself that I think that that's going to happen. Having watched him now, I'm curious what you think like a realistic ceiling is. When he was coming out from Missouri, I thought like absolute best case scenario was like similar to Matt Stafford. And that's like everything goes right.
Yeah.
I would say at this point, I don't necessarily think that. Matt Stafford's pretty damn good.
It's the same thing with Stafford, man. It's like he doesn't have the arm that Stafford has to do that type of stuff. He just doesn't. It's a B-plus arm.
Yep.
Like, so one of the things that I've thought about this past kind of draft season that's kind of caught me, and I don't have any data to back this up, and it's really just a hunch, but I think we overrate guys. It's like an optical illusion. We overrate guys with that quick throwing mechanic. Because I say this because of the Justin Fields versus Zach Wilson versus kind of Trevor Lawrence type of situation. But it's really Fields versus Zach Wilson, where Zach Wilson has a super quick release. And so it's like, oh, wow, look at this guy throw the ball. He can throw it 100 yards. What an A-plus arm, blah, 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 blah. Where it's like with Fields, he does have a little more like belabored release. So it was like, oh, well, you know, he doesn't have the arm strength. He's not accurate, blah, blah, blah. When it's like that's really more of an optical illusion, because we see that, like, it's, we don't see the ball. Once the ball comes out of his hand, we only look at the result or something. But like the process leading up, just because the arm, like the literal arm, comes slower from Fields, it's like, oh well, he doesn't have the arm that Wilson has. And I think Locke is in the Wilson category, where he has this kind of like quick release, plus there's like a, people like watching quarterbacks who play a little like a backyard style, who like, yeah, whipping the ball sidearm and stuff like that, and that's great. But again, it's not the arm is not as good as I think we wanted to believe coming out, and that we see now. Yep. And again, that goes back to Stafford, where it's like, hey, yeah, Stafford does all that cool stuff.
But
that arm is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous how his arm and the stuff that he can do with the ball. So yeah, it's, again, you're hoping that with these type of quarterbacks, and when you went back and watched Locke at Missouri, and especially the year that popped him, which was 2017, I believe, man, that offense is not anything close to an NFL offense. So you go and you throw for 50 touchdowns or whatever the hell it was, and then you get your name out there, like, oh, look at this kid for next year because he threw 50 touchdowns and whatever. But they're kind of fake touchdowns. Like, I'm sorry.
No, I'm like, glad you bring this up.
I love Josh Heupel's offense, and he was the offensive coordinator at Missouri that year in 2017 and 2018. I love that offense. I think it's one of, like, if I go back to coach again, that is the offense that I'm copying. I love it, but it doesn't put a lot on the quarterback on purpose. So it's like, now you have this great year where everyone's talking about you. Now, Heupel leaves. They bring in Derek Dooley, who's running. Now, they kept some of the stuff, but Derek Dooley had come, you know, from his stint in the NFL with the Cowboys, I believe. So there's more NFL stuff there. But it's like, oh, well, we saw Drew Locke throw for 50 touchdowns. So, the, you know, 2018 wasn't as good. But it's like, okay, well, he threw 50 touchdowns in 2017. So it's okay. Like, don't worry about it. When it's like, okay, well, some of those touchdowns, most of the plays were not anything that's translatable to the NFL. So again, I go back to the same thing that I talked about from the beginning. Now we have to wait for a quarterback to become a real quarterback and doing all those nuanced things. Well, with Stafford, and I don't remember this 10 years ago, with Stafford, he has an A-plus arm. So you can live with it for a couple of years while he figures it out. Like I said, with Justin Herbert, he has an A-plus arm. So you can live with those things as it comes out. And I don't think you can do that right now. And you're seeing it with Locke, because it is not an A-plus arm. Even though we wanted to believe it is, because there's a lot of whip and there's a lot of cool looking plays. But I don't think there's a lot of substance there.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a lot of people, not a lot, but there's definitely a camp that believes that Locke would have gone higher in the draft had he come out after that 1 year. And my argument is always, and again, this is an interesting conversation to kind of, like, as a side note, where you come out, granted, you get more opportunities for coming out, yes, going higher, 100%. But that said, like, Locke would probably still have the same problems had he gone higher than where he went. It's just that he may have more patience to try and put it together. So it doesn't necessarily solve the issues.
No, I mean, that's, he is who he is, wherever he gets picked, right? It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he would have probably got, I mean, he still was picked relatively high. I mean, like, middle second round, like, okay, that's still high. But yeah, he could have been late first round type of quarterback. And yeah, it just went, it might have been even – look, I think the offensive line play does not help the type of quarterback he is.
Yeah.
Because, again, the Zach Wilson thing is interesting, because you have a kid who – they're both similar in that, like I said, B-plus arm, but they look cool. Like, it's, you know what I mean? They run around, they make plays, they look cool, they got some swag, whatever. But, like – so if you gave Locke a real offensive line, especially in the interior, like Zach Wilson had at BYU last year, where they're just stonewalling people in giving these pockets that I've never seen in my life before watching football. Yeah, it looks fucking cool. Like running around, no problems, because you got no edge rushers, you got no one pressure in the middle. Yeah, and I think Locke could have looked a lot better. But at the same time, again, it does not fix the actual fundamental issues with Locke, which is everything. I don't even know what to say. Like, you're watching it and it's like he's got problems. The short accuracy is not great. The deep accuracy, I think you're holding on for this idea that he can make plays down the field. Well, and he can once in a while, but he also has safety blindness.
I'm glad you bring this up, because one of the stats that often comes up in big time throws. It's the big time throws. Yep.
Yeah. Here's your issue with big time throws. And you can be like, hey, you know, hopefully this is stable year to year with this particular quarterback. But one of the reasons why big time throws, and you can go on pff.com and look up all our articles that we've written about the stability of these type of statistics, and BTTs are not very stable year to year. And why? It's the issue is like so many big time throws are like, they're lucky. I don't know what to say. They're lucky. Like yes, accuracy is important on those throws, but like you throw enough of them, you throw enough, you know, go balls down this like vertical outside shots, one of them is going to go find the breadbasket, and those are going to be touchdowns. They're going to be 50 yard throws. They're going to be, as we chart, big time throws, but that's not quarterback play. Like anyone, I always think about this one play Russell Wilson made last year to DK Metcalf, which absolutely was charted as a big time throw. It was in the Atlanta game, which I believe was their week one or week two in Atlanta. So they basically, and the Broncos ran this kind of concept a little bit here. But so the whole game, they were running basically a two-man route concept. Play action, two receivers, you know, big heavy formation, two receivers out wide. DK Metcalf is one of them. I don't remember the other receiver. They're both going to run down the field, straight down the field. And Russell Wilson is going to say, safety, I'm going to look like I'm throwing to the left, but I'm going to come back to the right, and I'm just going to throw the ball up to DK Metcalf. Like, that's not like – and he threw it in the breadbasket. It was a beautiful throw. And Russell Wilson obviously is one of these quarterbacks that's kind of a weird quarterback to bring up, because he has, like, done some unsustainable stuff for many, many years in a row, like stuff like that. But it's like that – like – I could go back there and look off the safety and just throw a jump ball down the field to my receiver. Yeah. That's not like elite quarterbacking. Elite quarterbacking is so much more than that. So that's why big time throws are not stable year to year. So that's where the Locke thing is like, yeah, you can be like, hopefully maybe he's just that guy who does a lot of big time throws. But the thing is, like, you know, with Russell Wilson, it's like, yes, he is this guy who year after year does some unsustainable stuff, whether it's outside the pocket, making these insane throws outside the pocket, whether it's these moon balls that he's throwing that are complete more than other guys, but he's super accurate in other areas as well. Like, there are issues with Russell Wilson that we're not going to get into, but he is very accurate from the pocket. Drew Lock is not that. So, like, it's just it's tough for me to envision. It's the same thing. I keep going back to the same thing with Stafford, with Herbert, and now the real one that you want to look at is Josh Allen, because he's the third-year breakout guy.
Yep.
Josh Allen has an A-plus howitzer.
Then he's a better running threat.
And he's a better running threat. He's a legit running threat. So it's like, man, it's just – if you were betting on it – like, I'm not anti-Drew Lock. I hope it works out for him. I don't have a problem with him. But – if you were betting, you just wouldn't – you bet on him to break out, I think.
Well, that's – on. And again, like, some of this stuff was showing up the rookie year, which is one of the reasons why I was really, really opposed to John Elway last year. And again, we're getting in the weeds or kind of on topic. But, like, this is why I didn't like the fact that the Broncos didn't bring in anybody but Jeff Driscoll last year. Just because if Drew Lock flamed out kind of how he did last year, it would have been nice to have at least somebody in the wings to keep the offense at least, like, functional. Because there were games last year where the offense was just basically stuck in reverse. the Atlanta game, you know, and again, the Atlanta game, the first Oakland or Las Vegas game was really, really ugly. And so I'm glad that they brought in Bridgewater. I do kind of to preface it. So Bridgewater, he spent 2 years with the Saints. He went to Carolina last year. It was his first season starting. So again, a lot of first season starting since wrecking his leg. So in a lot of ways, there's similarities between Locke and Bridgewater. And I know you know this. As far as like the COVID excuse, the OTAs, the preseason, all that stuff. The question I have for you with Bridgewater and kind of like building off of that, if Drew Locke has a B plus arm, what would you give like Teddy Bridgewater's arm? Because like that's been like the big question coming out of Broncos camp has basically been like, well, Drew Locke throws, you know, throws a real fastball. Teddy Bridgewater, and I think Jerry Jeudy said it, he kind of just lofts it up to you. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Jeudy loves him.
Yeah, it's like a C plus arm, I think.
So it's not that far accuracy. Apart. Yeah.
Not that, but I think, yeah.
It's a difference. Well, it's a noticeable difference.
You know, there's that like, I'm not a math guy, but like that's like normal distribution where it's like, yeah, you have these outliers on the ends, but really everyone, 90% of the NFL quarterbacks are in the very small range of arm strength.
I'm glad you bring that up. So I learned scouting from the Scouting Academy with Dan Hatman. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But the grading scale that we used through it is a 7-point scale. And basically he said the same thing is basically most guys finish between like adequate, which is a little bit below average, and good. And then kind of like as you get farther and farther out, you have the very good and the elites and then the poor and marginal guys. And I would say like Drew Locke is good to on his best days, maybe very good as far as his arm. Yeah. And I considered Bridgewater probably solid when his legs were good. He actually, and I think I shared this with you, he had admitted in OTAs that he actually got hurt last year.
Yeah.
And I thought he had a good game the game after he got hurt. But after that, I think it does start to show up a little bit as now that I know that going back. Because his last few games, you start to see he just didn't have the arm in certain spots, but he was missing part of it. Like not missing his leg, but he was hurt. But
yeah, I think with Teddy there is like, and you had said this before, like we know who he is now, like play style wise, that's not going to change. But I think the difference with Locke and Teddy is that you're hoping that like the results are different in a sense. Cause you're thinking, okay, Locke can still improve where Teddy's kind of like here. You know what I mean? We know who he is and we kind of know how good he is. Where with Locke, you're like, we know who he is, but we don't know how good he can be.
Yeah,
which I don't think it's going to be that much better, but whatever. With Teddy, we talked about this. It's just like
the Alex Smith problem.
Yeah, like you're good enough to take some chances here, Teddy, and he just won't take chances. He just won't throw the ball down the field. He is in some cases, and I wrote this in the article. He is like teach tape for young quarterbacks to look at because the footwork is really good. You know, it's great in the pocket footwork. He understands how to maneuver in the pocket, step up in the pocket, do all that stuff. But you're just like, your accuracy is not good enough to throw the ball and check it down as much as he does because we're not. Everyone wants to be Drew Brees. Everyone wants to be like, hey, look, we just have a guy and we can just, you know, you'll never go broke taking a profit. And it's like, okay, that's great if you have Drew Brees because he's never wrong in his throw. He's always putting the ball on the money. Maybe not in 2020, but before 2020, he's always putting the ball on the numbers and so the check down is 5 yards. Whereas with other humans, the check down is not a guaranteed 5 yards because
yep.
You're putting it behind him. You're missing him completely, et cetera. So I think with Teddy, it's like the accuracy is good, mm-hmm. but it's not elite. So it's like you can't be living in that type of world and expect to move the ball consistently. You gotta take some chances to create explosive plays. And he just has not done that in his career. That's not who he is. And I just wonder if that'll ever be who he is.
And so I guess, and this is kind of like a hope against hope type thing. So I asked this because the way you said that though, he has the arm that if he decided to take those chances and like some of the charting does show up like this, where when he's thrown downfield and again, like this is pre-injury, he's capable. Like, he's actually able to get the ball downfield. Again, it's not going to look as good as Locke's just because his arm's not quite the same. But it's not like a lot of people have boiled down the quarterback competition in Denver to basically, if Drew Locke starts, Courtland Sutton and Tim Patrick will look good. If Teddy Bridgewater starts, the underneath guys will look good, but Courtland Sutton and Tim Patrick will suffer for it. Possibly true if Teddy's just not going to give him chances. But if Courtland Sutton's getting open downfield, Bridgewater probably can get him the ball.
Have you seen Michael Thomas's stats with Teddy Bridgewater as his quarterback? Like, he can find the X receiver. Like, don't worry about that. He'll find the X receiver.
But so that's like, and again, I know I'm hoping against hope, but like, there's a decent chance that Teddy Bridgewater realizes, and again, like, any way you want to point it, but there's a halfway decent chance that Teddy Bridgewater puts it together. If he unlocks that part of his brain, he might have a career year this year with the weapons around him, because the Broncos supporting cast is insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're young, but there's a lot of talent.
Yeah, but it's like, is that going to happen?
Yeah,
You hoped it that, you know, playing with Sean Payton, you know, being that type, you know, just like getting that type of training, you know, every day in practice with him and Breeze, and then going to a place where he went to Carolina. He already knew Joe Brady. You know, they had worked together for a long time, for a year, I guess, in New Orleans. And it wasn't all that good. And like you said, at the end of the year, after the injury that we know of now, accuracy just was – it wasn't very good. But you're hoping that's not who he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's more of like the Teddy that we know and love. So, I don't know. I will say this one thing about Teddy. It's non-football related. And, I obviously don't know him personally. But just, like, following the Saints, and I happen to be wearing a – New Orleans Saints hat right now, following the Saints, it's like, this is the guy you want on your team. And I know it's like irrelevant because, like, really you need people who can produce, but he just seems like a good dude. And I know every time you want to believe someone in sports is a good dude, they find a way to make you eat those words, but he just seems like a good dude that I would love him back on the Saints. I know, like I don't think he's I wish he was better because he seems like a good dude, but I don't know if he'll ever hit that ceiling that I think we all hope for him.
Yeah. But no, but that's one of the reasons why I'm rooting for him. And again, I hope the best quarterback plays. So it's not, I'm trying not to really take sides in this just because it's going to get ugly. Cause I've seen Broncos quarterback competitions. but the thing is, regardless, like you said, though, Bridgewater seems like a really character, like everything I've heard from him, everything I've known about him, I've followed him since he came out into the league.
Mm-hmm. Loved him at Louisville. Loved him at Louisville.
And he's been a backup. He's been a starter. He's basically almost washed out of the league because of injury. So like those experiences and the fact that like everything he said publicly is basically that he's trying to like help other people learn from it. Like that kind of stuff is what you want in a quarterback room.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Like I think whether he wins the job or not, I think whether he wins his job or not, he'll be good for Drew Locke.
Same.
Be good for the quarterback room. And so you're hoping that that helps the whole team as a whole, even if he's not starting, that he's just helping there in the room. I think he's that type of guy.
So I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot. So if you have Joe Brady on your podcast later, you might not want to have this on in case it's like disparaging. But one thing Bridgewater brought up, because again, fans do the box score stuff. So like they point to Teddy Bridgewater's touchdown to interception ratio, and a lot of people just can't see past that. The fact that Bridgewater brought up that they didn't practice 2-minute stuff, they didn't practice red zone very much last year, really caught my eye just because it was one of those things like that seems really weird. And I've watched 5 Bridgewater games so far. I'm not all the way through yet, but from what I've seen, some of that does seem kind of fair. But again, you know Joe Brady better than me, and you obviously you're going to understand the scheme part of it a lot better than me. Like, is it kind of like, and I'm not trying to say it's an excuse, but like, they ran the ball a lot in the early going. They ran the ball a lot in the red zone. There's a lot of like verticals type concepts where it's putting a lot on Bridgewater to squeeze a ball in. It seems like there's not a lot of. Am I talking
about? No, you're talking about 2019 LSU and Joe Burrow squeezing the ball in on like. What I call like a swirl route, like a corner stop in the end zone. They ran that a lot in the national championship game against Clemson. They scored 2 touchdowns on that play. There's a lot of that type of stuff in Joe Brady's offense. So I guess if they're not super, easy concepts per se. So I guess if you're not practicing in the way that Teddy thought they should be practicing, then that would be an issue. But I just don't know like what the NFL is like. I know that, you know, people came out and said, well, that this should be, your situations are like full days, like red zone and 2 minutes are like full day practices. Third down is a one full day of practice. So it is kind of weird. It does seem a little college, you know, and we obviously know Matt Rhule and Phil Snow, the defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator Joe Brady, all were coaching college recently. And for a couple of them for a long time in college. So maybe that was it. And maybe they'll learn their lesson in Carolina and they'll come here with more of an NFL experienced staff and do some things the way that Teddy thinks they should be done. And that'll prove to be better for Teddy.
So, and I'm kind of jumping around a little bit because I know I kind of gave you this as like a topic three. Who do you think fits like what you know Pat Shurmur's offense kind of better before we kind of go ahead.
This is the question, is it what is Pat Shurmur's offense?
And you did an offensive scheme analysis. And again, if you guys haven't checked that out, I do recommend it. It's at PFF. You don't need a subscription to read it. So go read it because it's very informative overall. I have it saved because it'll help me basically down the road, basically looking ahead to every other team the Broncos play. So again, guys, go check it out. But from what you know of the Pat Shurmur offense, then I guess like what are your thoughts on it kind of as a overall, but then also like how do you think that helps each quarterback?
Well, again, so I go back like what is the Pat Shurmur offense? Because I just recently watched the 2020 lock tape and I don't remember as much of the 2019 lock, but when I look at the data and I look at where they're asking the receivers to run routes and where the targets are, he's like, hey, we're not going to put people over the middle of the field. You have your crossing routes and because they do run a lot of outside zone play action and they're going to boot and they're going to have a crossing route come across. So like that's part of it. But in terms of like the straight drop back game, snag, they run a lot of snag, like the corner and the spot and the sit like, okay. And with the arrow and like, okay, that's, I didn't see a lot of offense.
Yeah.
Especially in the drop back game and especially because you can't give him quick game because it's just useless. Like, what is the point if he's not going to hit them consistently? This kind of goes back to what I'm saying about Breeze and like the check down stuff. Like, what is the point if you're – yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm not trying to – but one of the big complaints about Shurmur last year – first of all, there's this whole thing about how Shurmur took over for Scangarello, who left for Philly after he got fired. And like there's a big segment of Broncos country that basically thinks that was a huge mistake because Scangarello was doing a better job with Locke. And I don't know, again, how much you've watched, you just mentioned the 2019 stuff.
Yeah.
But the other thing was there's a big complaint about Shurmur running the ball too much on second and long or second and medium. But part of that, in my opinion, and again, I'm not trying to make excuses for Shurmur either because I have a laundry list of issues with him. Part of that, though, is if you don't have a drop back game and you're stuck on second and long,
What
the hell are you going to call?
Yeah, and it's also just like regardless of – because I'm not here – like I just don't have an opinion on Shurmur. Mm-hmm. But it's also just like that is nothing to do with Drew Locke. Like, whether he – well, I mean it kind of does tangentially like, okay, yes, obviously like you said, if you don't have a quarterback, you're going to run the ball more. But that has nothing to do with whether Drew Locke is going to be good or not.
Yeah,
maybe that would lead to more third and longs. Obviously, running the ball in second and long does lead to more third and longs, which doesn't help Drew Locke. But at the same time, like if you knew this guy was a player, then you would, like you said, you would just run the ball less on second and long because you could get away with throwing the ball and figuring out plays for him. After, and it's just like, yeah. So like, yeah, I don't know what the Shurmur offense is, because it does seem a little pared down to a normal NFL offense from what I saw. And they do some good stuff. And I'm not anti Shurmur in terms of play concepts.
I like the running
game. The running game's good. Play action off it is usually pretty good. And then, like I said, the drop back game is just so pared down because they just not a lot to do there.
So in that way, and again, part of this, so I don't know if you know this, and I'm going to end up bugging you about Peyton Manning down the road, but so Drew Lock did work with Peyton Manning. I think we made a big deal about it here in Broncos country, but I think it was 8 hours. They watched a lot of stuff. The thing Drew Lock basically said was a lot about knowing his protection's better, getting to his hot, stuff like that.
That's
in theory, yeah, you need that. And obviously, like, that's something Manning would probably be able to help with quite a bit. That kind of stuff, in theory, should help him in those situations in the dropback game, I would hope. But kind of hearing you talk about it, I would assume that you think that Bridgewater, in my mind, Teddy Bridgewater seems like he's probably going to win the job unless Drew Lock made a massive jump.
I think so. I think he's a better quarterback, and therefore he should be the starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos. I mean, I don't know how else to put that. Obviously, like you said, if they see this really massive jump, but it's going to be tough, man, because the accuracy, man, like you're just going to go and all of a sudden become a guy who's not overthrowing everybody. Like,
people don't do that in the NFL unless they're Josh Allen.
Yeah. Again, it's like, maybe this is the future where we're seeing 30-year breakouts all the time. But like you said, if you look at the past, you just don't see it.
Yep.
And he could be another outlier. You never know. Like, he could be another outlier. But yeah, I would think it's Teddy's job. And I think that it gives, like I said, I think it gives the rest of the roster a boost having Teddy in there rather than Locke. Because I think Teddy, if he just wanted to, could also hit some of those big time throws that Locke does. So yeah, I think it's tough for Locke after watching after 2020 to come back from that.
Assuming the best quarterback plays, so either Teddy or a Locke who's better than Teddy.
Yeah.
How optimistic should Broncos fans be about pushing for the playoffs? I know the Chiefs are almost definitely going to be, the leader. And obviously, again, you're the Herbert guy now, so you're probably a believer in the Chargers. but like, do you think they could push for the playoffs? Like, they have a pretty soft schedule.
Yeah, I love what they did on defense, going out and getting secondary players to pair them with a really good secondary coach, and safety is good and everything like that. You're getting Milton Vaughn back. I like that. Defense is fine. Receiving core, I think we haven't even seen it at its top level. So I think it could even be better than what we think. And Fant could be an all-star, an all-pro player. Sutton could be an all-pro player. Judy, it could be just a tremendous receiving group. If Garrett Bowles continues to be the player that he's been last year and going forward, and, Bobby Massey is a very solid player at the other tackle spot, like, they're good tackles. Obviously, interior offensive line, still don't know. I don't think it'll be as bad as last year because it was pretty bad. So that'll help. So if you just have a solid player like Teddy, hey, you never know, man. You're hoping for a Saint-like, stretch there like they did in where you went 5-0 or 6-0, whatever it was in 2019, replacing Drew Brees, where there's a lot of talent. Get the ball to Michael Thomas, have a good running game, get some special teams plays like the Saints did that year. And have games where, hey, you know what? We're not going to move the ball because Teddy's just not – it's not his game today. But you win a game like the Saints did in Jacksonville in 2019, 13-9 or whatever the hell it was, because the defense showed up. I think that's what you're hoping for, and you can get to the playoffs that way. You really can get to the playoffs that way. Tough division, I understand, but you have three wild cards now, and yeah, I think you can get to the playoffs that way.
So if you – there's a big segment of Broncos fans that think Aaron Rodgers is not – there's no way he's going to get moved, all that stuff. So I'm throwing this out there if you're listening. If you ardently believe that there is no way the Broncos will ever acquire Aaron Rodgers, this is probably the part where you want to turn it off, unless you want to listen about Peyton Manning, because I do plan to bug Seth about Peyton Manning as well. But I want to talk about Aaron Rodgers a little bit because, again, as somebody who studies quarterbacks, you're probably well-versed in Aaron Rodgers at this point. First of all, Broncos should trade for him if he's available. Like, there's no question, right?
No question. No question. Like, you can give up some good players in return for him with the draft picks, obviously. Like,
and you think it's worth it?
I think it's worth it. Yeah.
Cool. The one big concern, because I've written a couple things about it. The one big concern I have about Aaron Rodgers is 38, or he's going to be, a little bit older pretty quick here. So the idea of giving up, let's say you have to give up Bradley Chubb. And again, that's
yeah. But you know what though? Go ahead.
I just want to say, like, my fear, because like outside of Tom Brady, basically everybody else hits 40 and they start to really hit a wall. Like we just saw it with Drew Brees. I kind of think like Ben Roethlisberger's kind of hit this too. And there's other guys as well. Peyton Manning hit this wall. Like he basically his body started to fall apart.
Yep. Same with Brees. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same with Ben. Yeah.
Yeah. But nah, worth it.
Well, because here's the thing. I don't believe like I'm starting to like not really believe in like windows and like having like extended windows for teams. And it's like, so what if like if you had the chance, because we're assuming that Aaron Rodgers is going to continue to be MVP caliber for two more years. Let's say two more years.
Yep.
Don't you take that now over? Who cares about the future in 10 years?
Who cares? Would it do it.
Like, go, like, I think as fans, maybe I'm biased right now. I'm living through a very fun playoff run by my favorite hockey team right now. They're in the conference finals as we speak. Hopefully they'll get to the Stanley Cup finals. You know, by the time you're listening to this, they're in the Stanley Cup finals. They're not a good team. Okay. The Montreal Canadiens are not a good team. They were the last team in the playoffs. They've been a yo-yo team, basically mediocre for many years. This is so fun that I don't care if what this means is, you know, we don't have to get into hockey so much, but like them going to this far in the playoffs means they're not going to make a lot of changes. Yep. And guess what? They might not make the playoffs next year because it's not – I don't know if the roster is that good. I don't give a shit how this affects the team 10 years from now because I'm having such a good time. So like with the Broncos, it's like I don't care if they trade Bradley Chubb, who is could be an all-pro defensive end for these 2 years of potential. Like this, that's the whole point, is to win one Super Bowl. We've been led astray by the Patriots because they won so many. That's not normal. It's like, oh, how did the Saints have Drew Brees for 15 years and only won one Super Bowl? It's like, yeah, that's normal. It's normal. It's such a hard thing to do.
And you had 15 years where you every spring you thought we might go to the Super Bowl this
year. Yes. Like it's important. You want that. So I'll take the 2 years if it means like the next 10 are whatever. Because those are fun, man. That's what you want. You want playoff football. You want to be there in the playoffs and you want a home game at Mile High. You know what I mean? Those are fun. So, yeah, take Aaron Rodgers and forget about it. I don't care about the future if you have Aaron Rodgers right now.
So since we're assuming that Aaron Rodgers is going to be an MVP for 2 years, I want to bring this up just because – and you were out in front on this. Aaron Rodgers before last year wasn't – like he was good, obviously. He's Aaron Rodgers. But he was not as good as the reputation that he had. Do you think it's because my concern again? This is maybe I'm too down on this. If the Broncos trade for Aaron Rodgers, they're not inheriting
Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, they're getting Pat Shurmur with Aaron Rodgers. Some of those concepts, Pat Shurmur can steal the dragon concept. Pat Shurmur can incorporate a lot of the stuff that worked, but he's not the same play caller. Do you think that should be a concern, or do you think it's okay? Like, do you think it'll?
I think there is a bit of a concern. I think Matt LaFleur turned out to be a very, very good play caller and offensive coach, 100%. But I think the main thing that has turned Rodgers around in this last year, even though they went to the NFC Championship game 2 years ago, like it was a weird team and no one was really sure. And I think a lot of people predicted them to regress. And the reason they didn't regress was because Aaron Rodgers trusted the people around him, which clearly is not something that Aaron Rodgers does very often, but he trusted the people around him on the football field. He trusted the play call. He trusted the receivers to get open. And obviously he trusts himself as this elite quarterback. So I think you can go to another spot and hopefully have that same trust again. And if that's the case, you're getting
MVP.
You're getting one of the best quarterbacks. Yeah, you're getting an MVP. So I think, yes, the scheme helped. I think LaFleur is a really good coach. But I think that at the end of the day, if Aaron Rodgers just plays within himself and doesn't just try and do everything, you're fine. You're fine with Aaron Rodgers and Shurmur together.
So then, assuming that part, you said basically Bradley Chubb, couple pick, like
whatever.
Yeah, basically what it takes.
Okay. Well, I mean, like you wouldn't want to like trade one of the receivers because then you're losing one of the guys on offense that's going to play with Rodgers. But like on defense, Chubb. I mean, yeah, to me, one of the secondary players. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because you're going to score points, and it doesn't matter if you take away a player on defense.
That's fair.
And you feel pretty good about your defensive coordinator too. So, you know, the scheme too. So like, you're fine.
And so since we're on the whatever it takes kind of, I was the whatever it takes guy with Deshaun Watson. And again, I don't want to get too bogged down in this part of it. Obviously with 22 pending lawsuits against Deshaun Watson, like there's a decent chance he's unmovable. His disposition, last I heard, is not going to happen until after the next Super Bowl. Word is he's not going to settle. So like, we're in like limbo with him. The NFL has not punished him at the time we're recording this. So right now, technically, he could play this year. He's still demanding a trade from the Texans. Again, I know you know this, but I just got to throw this all out there. I know for PFF, you wrote an article because I thought it was brilliant. This is back when I thought Deshaun Watson could be a Bronco. You basically said he was one of the best quarterbacks. Like that was one of the best quarterback seasons you've watched last year.
It was good. He was really good.
He
might not play in the NFL ever again. So yes, it's kind of irrelevant.
It is. But like pie in the sky. And again, like I'm not saying this to discredit the allegations against him, any of that stuff. But pie in the sky, let's say he comes out of this, he's innocent, nothing happened. Similar mindset with him though, basically trade whatever it takes to get him.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I want to ask you about that because you studied him. So I got to – and again, I'm not assuming pie in the sky. I'm not assuming, you know –
I wouldn't assume pie in the sky either.
No, I'm not – but I'm not assuming anything with this. I've read so much kind of about how these cases go. Basically, it's – and again, I know you know this. I'm just saying this, you know, for those listening because I have been accused of basically trying to be an apologist for this. I'm not an apologist for Deshaun Watson. I'm saying we don't know. But – From a pure football standpoint, I do think it's still something to just think about. The Broncos are a team that needs a quarterback. He's a quarterback, or he was, and he would be if he could play again.
It's a big if.
It is a very, very big if. And again, if he's guilty of it, obviously, like I hope it plays out how it needs to play out. But I wanted to ask you about it because I didn't know you wrote that. And I thought it was a very insightful article. Kind of on the back end of it. I want to ask you about Peyton Manning just because I've been wanting to talk to you about Peyton Manning forever. And it was one of those things like Peyton Manning's going to the Hall of Fame. I actually want to go to Kent. I haven't gone to Kent for any of these speeches yet. I think it'd be boring just because you're just going to be sitting and listening to speeches.
Probably, yeah.
But at the same time, it's Peyton Manning.
You go to the game, right? Like the next day they have the game.
I go to the game, but it's, you know, it's a preseason.
Go to the Hall of Fame. I mean,
yeah, I've been once. I was there. I was, you know, neither here nor there. I was a filmer that essentially turned into a video coordinator for a D2 team. And we played against a team that actually played out of that stadium. So I was down in Canton and I got to see it. But kind of like in terms of like overall Peyton Manningness, like as a Broncos fan, I hated him very early on because he was the team that ruined my playoff experiences early on. The Rock Alexander game, I don't know if you remember this, but he had a perfect passer rating in this game. I want to say they scored 55 points. That's what led to the Champ Bailey trade. But over the years, like basically Peyton Manning was so fucking good that you basically are just like, dude, he's so good. I can't hate him. Like you just have to respect him. And it's kind of like not quite in the same level for me with Tom Brady. Cause like, I still kind of hate Tom Brady, but, but when Peyton Manning signed with the Broncos, I Tebowed. That's how excited I was. And then for it to actually go the way it did, like I was worried in 2015 because he was a zombie. I didn't think they were going to win a Super Bowl. I thought the whole time, like the offense, the wheels are falling off. Like there's no way this is going to work. But one of the things like in your breakdown a couple years ago that I thought was really, really insightful was you talked about how Peyton Manning was basically a clinic in terms of like how to throw on platform, how to like reset. Yeah. And you brought up and it made me like reevaluate how I watched him. It was because he had to be, because after the surgery, basically he didn't have like an off platform game. Like he basically had to be on, he had to be on to be able to make the throws.
I think so. I watched the 2013 season, yeah. I believe. That's, and I remember that season very well because I picked up Julius Thomas like like a minute after that game ended, week one on Sunday Night Football or whatever it was, when he had like six touchdowns, and I won my fantasy league because of that. But so my thing with Peyton Manning was I came into it being like, obviously I knew Peyton Manning, but I had never had like watched film on him, just watched games, you know, he's great, whatever. And I kind of was expecting these like really like elaborate quarterback plays where it's like, he looked this way and then he moved the safety and then he came back and then he did this and he went through all his progressions. Like, look how cool it is. He's in the pocket. He's maneuvering in the pocket while going through progressions. And it's like that happened. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but it wasn't as, you know, you see Drew Brees do that a lot. His eyes are darting around looking and he's moving in the pocket. He's resetting his feet. And with Peyton, it was like, it was just so clean. Like there was no ever look like he was panicked. He would throw these perfect. First of all, accuracy is out of control. Just perfect on every throw. And because of that, if he felt he could just throw on time all the time and the ball would get to his receiver and he wasn't throwing it to coverage. And honestly, there was a lot of throws to the sideline where it's like, hey, we're not going to really test the linebackers and the safeties and stuff like that. I'm just going to throw a perfectly accurate, timed ball on a comeback route to the sideline to Demaryius Thomas, and we're going to complete it every time. And a good example of that is, you know, they used to run their levels concept. I think they call it dig or digs, where you basically have a high-low on the, let's say, the will linebacker, one of the linebackers. And it's, okay, if he drops deep on the dig route, then you throw underneath. And if he stays short, then you throw over top. And with Peyton, it was like, and it goes back to kind of what we were talking about before of like being accurate in the short game. Like you can't be 80% accurate in the short game. You have to be 95% accurate in the short game or else it's useless. And it was like, if that linebacker opened up for one step, the ball was out. It was underneath. It was caught in stride. It was 5 yards guaranteed, and it might be 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 if they broke a tackle, if he turned upfield. So it was like, it was just the cleanest amount of quarterback play that I've seen. Just everything is clean. My friend Nate Tice says there's no meat on the bone. It was just clean. And like when you compare it to Locke, whose feet are always jittery and he's always taking an extra step and his feet are bouncing a little bit, like there's none of that with Peyton Manning. Yeah, he does that thing on his tippy toes a little bit, but in terms of like actual like mechanics, there's nothing wrong. And so it was like I went into it looking for some really cool stuff to break down, and it's like, no, it's just clean. It's just clean and perfect every time. And he knows where he should go with the ball before the ball is snapped every time. And especially at that time in his career, 2013, like, yeah.
Well, and that's one of those things that like people do that with Locke. People do that with a lot of quarterbacks. They're like, oh, he only throws to his first read. But the thing with like Manning to me, like really asserted to my, like kind of like reaffirmed my mind, like that's a bullshit claim because like if a guy knows how to get to his first read, why wouldn't he go to his first read?
100%. And plus, like, what is a first read? Yeah. No one really knows what a first read is. Everything is a first read and nothing is a first read, right? Like, so it's like, so I don't know. So yeah, that was just like super, super fun to watch in a very calming type of way where you're like, oh, that's just a beautifully thrown football every time. So yeah.
So would you say that that's kind of like the big difference between him and Drew Brees? Because I was going to ask you next, like, because again, you've watched a lot of Drew Brees and how, and I don't necessarily want to make you do like the whole Mount Rushmore thing, but like, obviously I consider them both like two of the probably four or five best quarterbacks ever. Just in terms, and I'm not doing like the rings conversation, you know, I separate that kind of stuff because it's a team game, but like they're the two of the three best quarterbacks I've ever like watched in terms of like, I've really watched them. And in a lot of ways they're similar, but there's obviously differences. And I think you highlighted a really good one with Brees is that he is like working through progressions and stuff quite a bit.
Yeah. You see that more. And obviously he's still like, can, you know, throw to his first read, quote unquote, like that's not a problem, but you just see him like getting, you know, because so with Peyton, with that unbelievable arm, you can always make that play to your again, quote unquote, first read. Where with Brees, it's like, hey, maybe I can't do that, especially like 2017 to 2019 Breeze, where he was elite, but he was getting older, and he knew he couldn't make a lot of those throws, so he had to go through progressions. And first of all, he wasn't like passing up open players. Like, that wasn't the case, but it was like, hey, you know, that's a more of a difficult throw for me, so I'll come down, I'll check it down. But he was just doing it at such a metronomical level. I don't know if that's a word, like a metronome, right?
It was
like tick, tick, tick. Yeah, it is now. Tick, tick. Just doing it every single time. So he had to be like that. Whereas Peyton Manning, it was still like up until 2015 when everything fell off, like you said, he was still being able to be Peyton Manning. Whereas Drew Brees couldn't be like 2011 Drew Brees anymore, where they were throwing the ball down the field and throwing the ball in posts and shit like that. Like, he could do it, but it had to be cut down. But what he could be was an elite player, getting through progressions, throwing the ball accurately underneath time and time and time and time again. So that was really that. They're very different quarterbacks. I mean, we know that. I'm not saying anything crazy, but they're very different quarterbacks in that regard.
So one of the big kind of starting to work towards, you know, letting you go, because I know I'm holding you up a lot. One of the big debates, and again, Broncos fans are doing this too, like with Pat Mahomes, like the whole Madden cover, Pat Mahomes getting the whole GOAT thing, because a lot of people are just saying it's way too early. And I do think, you know, you can't say he's a GOAT already in terms of like his, you know, his career's not over. But I think the reason we have this conversation with Mahomes is kind of wrapping back to your point with Herbert, is like, Mahomes came in and he's basically like, obviously A+ arm strength. He's able to make throws, you know, he's able to do things that I've never seen a quarterback do before. Mm-hmm. And he's figuring it out still. Like, he's still kind of elevating in terms of like the overall, like the finite parts of being a quarterback. So like, I've never seen a quarterback start his career like this. Like, there's definitely, he's on track to be.
He's on track. Exactly. But exactly. I think it's like, look, who cares? Like, I understand I understand you guys are Broncos fans, and it hurts. You know what I mean? Like, when your division rivals are, Tampa Bay just won a damn Super Bowl. I'm a Saints fan. Like, it hurts.
It sucks.
So like, I understand it, but it's like, in today's day and age, we're going to extrapolate and say like, oh, he is going to be the GOAT. He's the GOAT already, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. But I think the thing that you mentioned, that's the most important thing. And I think people don't understand, because there are some subtleties to it. He's like a savant in the pocket in terms of understanding coverages, in terms of manipulating defenders, in terms of doing what, you know, he wants a defender to do, what the defender actually wants to do. He's on a level that is kind of unique. It is unique. I've never seen this before. I've just never seen it before from the pocket, because yeah, he makes all these plays outside the pocket, blah, blah, blah. That's bonus to him. That's bonus. Whereas with Locke, it's like, that's what he like. He only has that.
Yep.
He only has that in his game right now. With Mahomes, it's just a bonus, because he is so unbelievably smart in the pocket, and doing some stuff that we've never seen before. So that's why he's on a level that people are calling him the GOAT already.
Well, and that to me is one of those reasons why, like, even if the Chiefs start to have to lose pieces because of their cap situation, Mahomes is still so good that it's not like they're going to suddenly become obscure, you know, an irrelevant team, unless like Reed retires and everyone gets hurt. Like, I just, Mahomes is too good. He's that quarterback. Like, he's the guy you win because of.
Yep.
And so, and again, yeah, I probably not news to you. I'm saying this just because, again, like, I don't like it. Like, I'm not rooting for this. Like, I would love for Mahomes to suddenly decide, you know what, I don't like Kansas City anymore, I want to live in South Beach. Like, I would prefer that.
Yeah.
But until that happens, like, I just think like the Chiefs are basically they're running the AFC West. And basically that's, the Broncos have to kind of live in that world. Like, they were the team that everyone else did that to forever.
Yeah.
Now it's the opposite. So.
But it's too bad, man.
It sucks. I feel
for you guys. It sucks.
I mean, hey.
Well, you got to hope. You got to hope that you find. You got to find a quarterback somewhere, right?
Have you looked at the 2022 class? I swear, I'll let you go after this.
I have. No, I haven't.
Is there any hope in that? Because again, like, there was a lot. Like, I know Dane Brugler from The Athletic basically said the NFL was really down on next year's draft, in terms of the quarterbacks. I know this last quarterback class, I thought it was one of the better quarterback classes I've studied.
It was, yeah.
I've watched Sam Howell. I've watched a little bit of Rattler. I don't think the Broncos will get Rattler anyway, so I don't think it matters. They're gonna have to bottom out. But
no, you'd have to get the first pick basically right now to take Rattler.
If they don't,
and that's it. That's the problem. Like, I don't know. Like, I kind of agree with, you know, this is not as of right now. Things change in a year.
Yeah, yeah.
But as of right now, it's not a great quarterback class. I think the only guy who you see as like a real NFL player is Rattler. I think with Howell, man, throws a really nice, accurate deep ball and does some really interesting stuff, but also that offense is fake. So I don't know about Howell, but he has, you know, he's played since he was a true freshman. This is an important year for him, though, I would say, in terms of his draft stock, because they lost so many talented skill position players.
It feels a little bit like the Jordan Love year. And again, I know they're not the same player, but how Jordan Love lost all that help around him and then had to kind of play without it. And I think in that way, we'll really have a good idea of what Howell is after this year because of that.
Yeah. And then after that, it's like a lot of guys who are in the same offenses that Howell is in, where it's like, and Drew Locke was in Josh Heupel's offense. It's like these offenses that do just a great, great job of making their quarterbacks irrelevant. So, like, yes, if you put I'm trying to think of a good example.
Carson Strong?
I can't. No, Carson Strong is very different.
Okay.
They play air raid there. They're, like, full-on air raid. It's okay. Wild. But I'm trying to think of a guy. Anyways, so, like, you have these offenses that are, like, very collegiate. That's what I'll say, like, very collegiate. And they don't put their quarterbacks in any tough situations. They're just throwing outside the numbers. They're throwing deep balls. That's it. There's nothing else. There's not very a lot of like nuance there. So we just don't know about him, about Malik Willis, about Derek King, like saying Howell, Malik Willis, Derek King, Dylan Gabriel, all these guys who are like in this group here. We just don't know about them because they haven't done any NFL thing yet. So, like, you really have to strip it down and be like, hey, we think the traits are good enough that we'll figure it out later. And there's not many guys like that. So, yeah.
So, I mean, and again, like, I know I didn't kind of give you any sort of, like, real warning on this. But so, my concern with that, just kind of, most of them, I assume, are still playing in the same offenses that you just described. So,
the only one is Dylan Gabriel goes from Josh Heupel's offense to Gus Malzahn's offense, which is a little different.
But Gus Malzahn's offense is pretty collegey too, though.
It's pretty collegey, but it's not as extreme as
yeah.
Josh Heupel runs the most extreme offense you will ever see in your life. So, like, yeah, there is going to be a big, big difference there.
But I just mean, like, even if all of them have really good years, we'll still be projecting a lot next year in the draft.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah. So it just means like some of these guys may end up being surprises, but it's going to be a bit of a crapshoot, even more than you would hope it is, like it was last year. Like this last draft. So,
yeah, I think you saw more NFL stuff from these quarterbacks than you did, even from Mac Jones. And everyone says, hey, you know, the easy offense, blah, blah, blah. It's not like the ones that are coming out next year.
Gotcha. So basically, you have me convinced that it has to be Aaron Rodgers. So,
I would love to see it too. I need Rodgers out of the NFC. So, let's go. Bring him to Denver.
So, awesome. Again, guys, if you do not follow Seth on Twitter, first of all, I have no idea how you don't, but if you don't, he is at @PFF_Seth. You can read his stuff at PFF. Again, I have the offensive scheme analysis saved. There's a Broncos thing coming out on Friday. I assume you guys are listening to this on Thursday. If you're not, it's probably already out, so go check it out. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
This was a pleasure. Anytime you want to do that, I'm down.